Hello, my name is Mike. Today I'm representing the Danish Society for Computer History, which I'm going to talk a bit about. And I will start that by talking a bit about myself. And that will also explain all my merch, because I have a YouTube channel where I entertain with and about old computers, and I repair them, and I play with them, and I collect them, and everything in between. But that's not why I'm here today. I'm also writing a book about a Danish computer, which is also interesting. I talked about that last year. And I misspelled my Twitter handle, so that won't work. And on the bottom, if you want to hire me for consulting work, you can also do that. But yeah, that's not why I'm here. I'm here because in Denmark, we have, that's my claim, one of the oldest computer museums in the world. We started collecting in 1989. And that's, I don't know if anybody of you know some who started earlier. But we started collecting, and actually we were backed by just wait a second. Just hang on. Okay, sorry, for some reason my notes were gone away. Whoa. Okay, so we don't know exactly who got the idea, but the municipality which we started in is called Ballerup, and that's known for being the Danish Silicon Valley, which is the place of all the bigger Danish and international computer companies in Denmark. So when we approached the local mayor, and that's the thing we don't know, I don't know, did we approach him or did he approach us? We can't find any records about that. And the old guys in the club doesn't, I don't know. I haven't got a clear answer yet. Let's put it that way. But the main takeaway here is that the municipality was actually in on it from the beginning, which I think is pretty rare. They wanted to make this huge project, and it got feature creeped right away. So instead of just building a museum, they wanted to build a data land, like several different buildings and several different projects. There should be shops and cafeterias and several buildings were involved. And the municipality kind of took that and ran with it. And we as the geeks, were left to do the collection, which we liked, collecting and repairing. So those four guys were the four guys who kind of started it. And this is the room they got. And they started collecting and they started repairing. And as you guys most likely know, that didn't go long before everything looked like that. But the collection started, and from 1989 to 1999, that was all that was going on. There were some meetings, but in that period, we were kind of waiting for the municipality to do their thing. And nothing happened because governments work differently than the rest of the world. But whatever happened was that in 1999, we actually managed to put together our first exhibition. And I'm very sorry, a lot of these slides are in Danish. That's because the slides were someone I got from a Danish lecture about the more or less the same subject. So look at the pictures and the years and the logos and ignore the text, please. But I simply didn't have time to put it all together. This is the brochure, which you no, it's not. It's a newspaper article telling about this event. So this was the local museum in Ballerup, which let us have like VCFB had in the Technische Museum like two before COVID, where we had the end of the whole place and filled it with old computers. That was what we did back then. That was great. That was the first public event we ever made. The whole thing about expecting the municipality to take action was also our major mistake, because the municipality wanted to support us, and we had this mayor who were the friend of technology and really wanted to support us. So I showed you the picture of the room just before and how quickly we filled it. I don't know if you know that. I think it's called somebody's wager. So the thing is that whatever amount of time you allot to a project will be filled up by that project. The same goes with space for computer museums. No matter how much space you give us, we'll find a way to use it. And this is the one angle of our collection in 2004-05. For a museum, we are very poor at dating our pictures. But this is about that time. And if you look at this picture, what you see over here is a working running gear machine, which was a second generation Danish built computer. You know that means it runs on transistors instead of radio tubes. So this is a collection of resistors, and that's a fully working computer we got there. The next generation from Rheinstein is right over. Right over there, all the yellow thing you see over here, that's the RC4000. That's a third generation machine, meaning we went from transistors to integrated circuits. Not microprocessors, this is integrated circuits. So this is some huge machines we have running. And when we had that running in the early 2000s, that was really exceptional. We also used the same space for our workshop. This is the same room, you just see it from the other angle. The problem with this was that we were just working, nerding away in our basement, repairing computers, and that was basically it. It was like a club for old nerds who wanted to play with old computers, but we didn't really get out to the public with it, and we didn't care because we had fun. We preserved the machines, which were our main purpose, but the municipality. That's for later, because we actually at this point realized that we had a problem because the municipality wasn't doing anything. So we started doing something ourselves. This is an illustration, again in Danish, sorry about that. But this is an illustration about what we wanted originally. Originally, we wanted the data museum, which is over here. The municipality wanted this huge thing of parks and cafes, showrooms, and everything put together in this data house. We went a little bit back and was like, but what if we just make a museum, conference facilities, and a cafe with a where you can buy a sandwich? And we tried to figure out a way to do that, and we actually fundraised enough to hire a consulting company called Rambøll, a Danish engineering company, to do a feasibility study for us. And they did that. And the short story was that with the current condition at this point we also funded a legal entity called the Danish Society of Computer History. Before that, it was only like a loose collection of people. But at this point, we actually became a legal, a legal entity. So if you look up in the company database in Denmark, you will find our funding year from being 2002. But the work started all back in 1989. But we kind of realized that we can't do this. We don't have the funding, we don't have the manpower, we don't have the public persona. People don't know us, basically. So we decided to shelve the plans for the museum for a while and focus on doing some public events to get the name out of our organization. So this new place we got two slides ago, that one also contained access to a conference room where we could do some speaking events. And there was a little we could sell soda water and what is it called, sodas and simple things like popcorn and something like that. So we could actually make some celebrations. So what we decided to do was we started to celebrate anniversaries. So I showed you the gear machine first, just before. The gear machine is the machine in the corner right here. This is an installation in the Danish town of Aalborg. And this was how it would be set up in a professional setting where it was used in an office. That turned 50 in 2011, and we celebrated that by restoring one of the original machines in running order. That was the machine you saw in the picture just before. Then we also had some exhibitions. This is the Danish Technical University, and this is the IT University. No, this is the IT University. This is the Post and Telegraph Museum in Denmark. And we also had an exhibition in the Danish Technical Museum, but we don't have pictures from that, because why would anybody want that for some weird reasons? But we had that. And then we celebrated different companies' anniversaries. Christian Rosing was a well-known Danish company who actually made part for the F-16. Another one was the Rheinstrahlen. We also celebrated 50 years for that company. Another popular Danish thing is the programming language Komal, which we also had a 40-year celebration for. All these events made it into the press, and every time we made it into the press, we got new members. I didn't bring it, but we have a graph that shows every time we got new members, and we can plot into that graph when we had these celebrations. So that worked really, really good for us. This was good for us, but the municipality, the relationship with the municipality looked a bit like this house. It wasn't that good. They slowly started selling our space. So in 2005, half of our space was taken away from us and made into a shooting range, which was good for the shooting club, I guess, but not as good for us. The first basement we got, they actually never took that away. They just gave us another one. So we didn't move our stuff. We just kept the old one in the old basement and filled up the new one. We did that 3 times. So we actually had 3 basements at one point. But the school, the municipality, was just like slowly being like, well, you can't have the basement of the school anymore. Why not? Because we need to tear it down. Okay, we'll get our stuff. And we moved out there. Next time, the second place we got was under the old town hall. And they would do the same thing. We're like, you have to move your stuff now. But why? You don't use the building. No, because it's full of, I don't know, what scheme is swamp in English? I don't know. It had like water damage, so there was this moldy. Yeah, it was attacked by mold, so we had to wear way before COVID. We had to wear masks down there, which that was not really productive for working down there. So slowly our living conditions was increased. So from having almost 3,000 square meters, we went to having less than 800 in 2019, right before COVID. And like 3 months before COVID hit, so that was in December 2019 came last, the municipality told us that they had to use our entire room for storing furniture. So we were apparently less important than their old furniture. So they would graciously leave us 120 square meters, which we decided to use for these two big machines, because we can't move them. We can maybe move them once or twice in their lifetime before they will get so much damage that we'll not be able to put them together again. That's at least what we fear. So we don't want to move them for a temporary museum. So why do we talk about a temporary museum? Because faced with a pistol to our forehead, suddenly all the members woke up and was like, maybe we should do something. And nerds are resourceful when they are threatened or feel like it's a crisis. So we got in touch with a new municipality because it went so well with the previous one. So let's try that again. But that actually worked this time. We were giving a school building. So this school building is also going to be torn down. So we only have it for 3 years. Well, 2.5 by now. But we have it. And we actually made we have opening hours, so every first Sunday in the month you can come and see our collection, and everybody can attend, and it's free to come and see it, and it's really popular. I mean, if you measure it by visitor count, we don't get sell tickets, so we can't claim any profit, but we have a space now with a public exhibition, and that's huge. Let me just see my notes. So what did we do to turn things around? First of all, our president of the union was a huge nerd, and no problem with that. Huge nerds are cool. But he had been a leader at the place where he worked before, but he was really into the collection and the preservation, and not really the type that would go out and land a 5 million donation. So we went to the CEO of the Danish company, the Danish, what do we call that? The Danish Agency for Governmental IT. So that's a dude who's used to talking with a lot of important people, and he has a huge network. We asked him if he wanted to be our president, and he said, yeah, right away. And then we have to do all the official things by having an election to get him elected, but everybody agreed that we wanted him, so that wasn't a problem. So we had him elected, and then I think the feeling of scarcity really, really made us run faster. Because that was what happened. Everybody was like, we need to do something now. That was really, really important. And we campaigned towards the public even more intensive. And in this period, we gained, I think, 200 members. And when I say a member, that's a private person who pays 250 Danish kroners a month. That's, what's that, 20 euros? Not a month, a year. So it's a really insignificant amount of money. But just having to go out and tell that we have 400 paying members, that means something when you go out and ask for money. And I think we are closing in on 1,000 private members right now. I should have gotten those numbers, but it's not important. We have a lot of paying members. We rented an external warehouse because the school wasn't big enough for all our stuff. So we used the payments from the members to pay for this, for these external warehouses. And then that was my notes for this one. By the way, I need to put a disclaimer. I should have put that in the beginning. This is maybe not my first, but I'm used to talking about technical stuff. And this is not a technical talk. This is more of an organizational thing. So I hope you'll bear with me for all the details. Ask me about how many bits and bytes the machine has. I can answer you. But understanding how government works, that's hard. So the rest of the talk is a tour around the museum we built now, that starts in the lobby. So we don't have that much space, about 600-700 square meters, depending on how much you count. So we want as much space as possible to count twice. So that's why the lobby is both the place for our lobby, where we have our timeline, which we built. We have some exhibition things. We also have some storage space for incoming donations down there. And that is also where we meet every Tuesday, every Thursday, and have pizza and discuss what's to repair in the next month, next week, or whatever. So we try to use everything twice. The next picture. We have a room where we want to show we call this the prehistoric room. For some reason, I forgot to take picture of the punch card readers, but we have those in the other end of the room as well. And we have a telex, and we have typewriters, and we have mechanical calculators. And this whole wall you see over here in this area is slide rules. So we try to show mostly the young ones, how did we do this before we had computers? Then we have the next room, we could call that meanwhile. We call it hand-built computers. But you see, that's actually a part of the first built Danish computer ever. It was called DASC, Danish Arithmetical Sequence Calculator. You spell that with the K in Danish. And that was built into a house. So it was a house with some stuff in it. So when that was decommissioned, you couldn't move it because moving it meant tearing it down. So we have parts of it, and the Danish technical, the Danish Technical Museum have parts of it. We don't have it running. We have an emulator that somebody made, but those parts will... having enough power to run a first-generation microcomputer would probably need funding equally to the museum itself. So that's not going to happen. Most of you probably know that. So the biggest computer we could get out there, I told you about our second and third-generation computers that wouldn't fit in the door. So the first is too wide to get into the door, and we will not turn it around because it will not work when we do that. I mean, these are so fragile that if you We can accept like 10 degrees of angle when we move them, but any more than that, we're afraid that it will break down and never be working again. So the gear machine is too tall to get in to the door, and the RC4000, which was the yellow one, is too wide to get into the door. So the oldest and largest computer we could fit in there was this RC8000, which is a follow-up to the RC4000. It's still a third-generation computer, but it was a more modern and smaller version. The integrated circuits got more advanced, so you need fewer of them, and it was more reliable, and there was produced a lot more of them. I don't know much about this machine. That's not my field of specialty. I just think they're cool, and I know, you know, the spec sheet of them more or less. We also made room for having events, because from experience, that's really a good way to make people know about you. So our company, we have memberships for private people and for companies. So companies pay a lot more, but they get some benefits. There are different tires, and there's a certain tire that if you pay that, I think it's about 2,000 euros a year. If you pay that, you actually get to come and have an event at our place once a year, where we will give a talk about a subject. And like if your company have history, we will of course make that about you. So like if you are IBM, we will show you how a talk about how IBM got into Denmark in the 1800s. That's an interesting talk, and that wasn't a mistake, by the way. They got into Denmark in the 1800s by selling punch card machines. No, not many people know that, but that was how they started. So, do any of you recognize the machine in the corner? That one over there. It has an Amiga inside. It was used on a lot of Danish television stations to play video games, just like Hugo. That was one of the biggest IT export successes from Denmark. Do you know this game? Yeah, it was hugely, hugely popular. And this machine actually was in a Czech radio station. No, television station, of course. That would have been a pretty boring game in a radio. So the thing is that there's a phone. So you call into the radio station and you press up and down on your phone. Actually, there was an example of somebody who would call in with a dial phone. With a circular calling device, and they would just shout in the microphone, up, down, up, 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 down, down, and the person in the studio would press the buttons. We got it working, almost. The phone is not working, so you can't play it, but we can start it and see that picture. That's more or less how far it goes. But somebody is working on, because that's analog circuits, and we need somebody the same age, or actually a lot older, because the person needed to have been working with that, you know that. We need somebody who can repair analog telephone circuitry, and we have a few of those, but they work really slow. So at some point, it will be fixed. And by the way, when I say that we work really slow, I'm not shaming them in any way. It's volunteering work, everything. So that eventually it will be fixed when the people doing it have time for it. And that's just how it's going to be when we are a volunteer-based organization. That's the same by Ballerup Municipality, by the way. We are very fond of them. We don't hate them in any way. We had to say that every time we talked about this case, because the internet is the thing that if we make it look like they are hurting us, the internet will start a flame war towards the municipality, and we didn't want that, because they helped us the first 30 years of our lifespan, and that's we're immensely thankful for that. So no shame at all. It just didn't work out. It's not you, it's us. Both, so no shame here. That's important for me to point that out. Question? No? Okay. So next up, we have a room dedicated to computer science teaching in primary school. So we actually mandated software development as a course in our primary schools back in the late 70s and the 80s. So you would learn to code when you went to school. And we had that actually was the reason why COMAL, the computer language, was created. And a lot of these different computers were computer companies actually were built upon supplying the Danish schools with computers for learning kids to code. I mean that's gonna be part of my second book, by the way. I'm gonna talk more about that in a while. We also have some machines that doesn't work. The first picture I showed you here, actually all these machines work, and on Thursdays, you will actually see the volunteers working with these machines. That could be testing out floppies we found, figuring out what software is on them, or trying to get software working so we can could do presentations about them. We have a project where we want to build robots in Lego that will be controlled by these machines. That's not a thing we're inventing. That was actually a package you could buy from Lego back then. You could buy a Lego kit where you could build robots and program them from your computer. We have a couple of these kits and we want to display them. That could be a thing I could be working on a Thursday evening down there, and that would be with one of these machines where I would actually use them. So this is a dual-purpose space as well. This is not. This is only exhibition. Some of these Apple machines are working, but I don't know which ones, and mainly only our Apple guy knows that. But this is a room where people will be, wow, that's so cool. You had one of these, Dad, when I was a kid. So this room is, even though very few of us actually likes the old Apple computers, it pays the bills by impressing all the visitors who remember these machines. Is this the same reason we probably should set up some PC computers as well at some point? We could put them up here. This is our micro room. What you see over here is, this is some Danish built 8-bit CPM systems. Actually that is a 16-bit DOS system. This is a Danish Supermax DDE, Danish Data Electronics, actually built Unix servers. What I would call them that with a modern word. They called them micro mini computers back then. This is some Sun systems, some IBM systems, and if you go to the next slide, which is outside of the same room, you see over here there's a NASCOM, and this is another DDE machine. This is a Christian Rosing, which were the other company I talked about, which also built computers. I don't know what that runs. I think it's a CPM. That's a Rechenzentral, 8-bit CPM based machine. Most of this is somehow working. We are not comfortable enough just to let them be turned on when there are visitors, but most of them we can turn on when somebody asks about them. And this is just Commodore computers, but I don't know. There is a really relic on that picture. Can anybody spot that? There are one machine who is like one in eight in the world on that picture. The machine you see over here, that one, it's a Commodore CBM 900. That's a Unix machine made by Commodore. And there are about nine in the world, and ours works kinda. When we made it work, we dumped all the EEPROMs in it, but forgot to dump the one in the keyboard. For some reason, there's an EEPROM in the keyboard. We didn't dump that, and that stopped working, so somebody needs to fix that. But that's fixable because there are other machines working, so we can fix that. But I would be lying if I said that's just a fraction of it. That's most of the machines we have on display. But stop by, if you're in Denmark at any point, stop by and see it anyway. Because I hope it will be an experience for everybody, even though I showed most of it here. Our future plans. So our current premises will be torn down in 3-2.5 years by now. So we plan to fundraise so we can purchase our next premises, so we own it. So we don't have to rely on some mayor being kicked out for being too whatever the people don't like about him. So we need 3 million euros. Anybody got some? I'm glad you have some. That's gonna be a tough one, but with what we did in about a year during COVID, I think this is possible too. I mean, if we can build a museum out of more or less nothing during a pandemic, 3 years outside of a pandemic will, I'm optimistic. We want to do more online content. So our next, we don't have room for a studio, but our next facilities will have a studio where we can do podcasts or we can do YouTube videos or we want to be able to roll in a mainframe and put it in a green or white room so we can take pictures with a green screen or a clear white background on it. And we want, because, I mean, having a working machine in Ballerup, well, the machine is working as long as you have the room in Ballerup. But as soon as we have good high resolution pictures of the machine, maybe a 3D model, and then an emulated version of the machine, then we can send it, we can share it amongst the entire world. We can send it to other worlds. I mean, at that point, the machine is preserved as long as we keep those bits that consists of the machine alive somewhere in the universe. So that's our goal. We want to build emulators for all the machines we have. We have a lot of unique systems. The CBM 900 is not unique enough for that, but a lot of the Danish machines is really unique. I mentioned I'm writing a book, and that book contains about 4 different machines. That's all unique enough that it's not... It is a general CPM machine, but it's just unique enough that you cannot just rely on the existing emulators. We have to tweak them a bit to get that running. And then everything within limits should be publicly accessible. Of course, back in the 70s, it was quite normal that you would be a member of some kind of organization that would send out a membership magazine once a month with your address in it. That was pretty normal. That won't fly today. And it won't fly if we take those magazines and digitalize them and put them online. So we need to do a little bit of moderation. But of course, we're keeping the originals. So let's say you find a magazine at our archive and you call us up and say, I'm writing a thesis about so and so and so. I really need to know who that guy was. We can go in and find that page with the name and address on you, and we can write in our files that we gave this to this research dude on these reasons, and he promised not to share it further than what's needed for his research. So we can help people with that, but it's just not directly available. We don't have a good solution for that yet. So that keeping 2 versions in our system is the same. The archive system we use is the same as archive.org uses. No, it's not. It's the same format we use. And that's not an easy way to have a censored version of whatever we archive. So we're still working on that. If anybody have an idea for that, drop me a mail. Yeah. Okay. So I teased it to a few people I talked about, but we actually think that the Swedish museum, was it Update? What was that called? Update, yeah. Had similar problems to us. And I'm pretty sure they had to solve similar challenges to us. And that's stupid. I mean, we should be able to work together. So we actually talked about at Born Hack last year that we want to create a pan-European network of computer museums. We want to share experience about interacting with governments, media, other museums, and alike. I mean, imagine that somebody pops up in the middle of nowhere in Italy. And he wants to make a museum. If he has to learn all the things we spent 30 years learning, it's going to take him some time. But if we can combine all the know-how of every other museum in Europe and like push that into his face like a huge burger, he might use some time digesting that, but eventually he will save himself a lot of trouble on the way. So, and I think it's a bit in the spirit also open source hacker mentality to share knowledge. So we want to do that. And then we want to that should not only be about building a museum. That should also be about, we have this weird old machine. How do we restore it, or how do we preserve it best? I have no idea how to preserve this, but I'm pretty sure if I could send out an email to a mailing list and everybody else in Europe that had an interest for that would be able to respond, I would be able to talk to somebody who either would take the machine for me and do it, or would help me. What should I read to do that? So it should both be the knowledge about the organizational things, like how do we create this museum, but it should also be practical. What's the best way to store a floppy drive, to store a floppy for 50 years? And then finally, we had some things we had to give away during our move, and we were lucky enough to know, just by random chance, know somebody else in Europe who could take some of the machines. But there's no formal way of doing that. I mean, we don't know any Italian data museums. And if we have had a computer that would be typically Italian, we wouldn't know who to call. I mean, we could Google, but I mean, it would be nice just again to have this mailing list and say, By the way, we just found 4 racks of Olivetti servers. We have no idea what to do with them. We don't really care enough for them to learn how they work. If somebody want to come and pick them up, here's our address. I think that would be an awesome tool to have. If that sounds interesting to anybody here or anybody out there in on the interwebs, my email address is there. We haven't formalized anything yet, but we want to start collecting names of people and museums that we need to contact once we are ready to launch something. The ideas we talked about at Born Hack was that we would do a traveling conference. So this year we have a conference. This is hypothetical. Don't come to the conference. But this year we have a conference in Copenhagen, and next year we have one in Germany, and next year we have one in the UK. So that everybody would be able to travel around and see each other's how they implement stuff. So and that would both benefit me for going there and the place I go for getting more visitors. But that's just loose ideas. I mean, we'll start by putting together the right people and then sit down and talk about how do we do this in the best and most efficient way. So if that sounds interesting to anybody or just a part of it, hit me up, and at some point we'll find a way to set up a way to talk about it and get a good idea of what this is going to look like. And then just one more thing, just like this Colombo thing from the television. I'm writing a book about Komal 80, the Danish programming language for educational institutions. And I'm talking to mostly you German guys, because I want to know how that language got introduced to Germany, if anybody can help me with that. So I know that the creator wrote a lot of it in educational medias, but I don't really know who read that and who actually took that and said, I want to teach this at my university. I need that piece of the puzzle. The first book I'm writing is not going to have that part of the story, but I realized that the story about Komal is significant enough, so I already decided that the next book I'm going to write is going to be about Komal. So if anybody knows how I can search German newspapers, scientific papers, or other archival sources, I would like to have a talk about that. And if anybody actually can help me do it, that would be great, because my German is bad. And that's really embarrassing, because I actually have, my dad was born in Germany, so yeah, that's on me. In general, if anybody has some information about Komal, that could be old user magazines, that could be like, oh, my mom coded that in school, I can ask her if she got her book yet, or if she knows the name of her teacher. That could be if somebody has a Komal 80 for the Robotron systems, that would be awesome. I never seen that, but that could be great. So any kind of information about Komal, please hit me up. And then back to the main thing, questions. No questions. I hope that's because I already said everything there is to say and not because it was boring. So thank you very much.